Hello and welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we bring you some of the biggest names and issues in politics. I'm Liza Gatandwa, Digital Politics Editor. In this episode, I am joined by ANC Youth League Secretary General Mduokolo Ngudle.
I will not renew my membership of the EFF. I also request to resign all positions in the EFF.
We are not going to have a parallel government run by hell and sin. There's one president here, and that president is Cyril Ramaphosa.
Vavas J.
Marikana. Marikana.
J.
Honorable members, be in order.
Those who are involved in state capture, actually be taken.
Does that include the top seven?
No.
Why does it not?
Don't start trouble. Nobody's going to announce tomorrow. The results are not correct. If that happens, people will be provoking.
You're dealing with Jacob Zuma. Every stage is a theater for him.
The people of Palestine, they're denied the right to enjoy the freedoms we so love.
Who are blown but not out.
Thank you so much for joining us. The ANC Youth League's Secretary General Mduokolo Ngudle. I think that the first question should be around you celebrating 80 years this year. This is your second year as the ANC Secretary General of the Youth League. What does this mean to you? When you think about 80 years of the ANC Youth League, what do you think about? What does this mean, this very pivotal time for you?
Now, firstly, greetings to you, Lizeka. Look, the 80 years since the formation of the Youth League means a lot to us because we've inherited an organization that is eight decades. An organization that has built what you know as a modern leader of South African politics. When we call modern leaders of the ANC, because the ANC is the oldest liberation movement, and therefore it gave rise to what is called modern politics in South Africa. So the modern African leaders were born through the early, 1970s, 17 upwards. Then that generation is the generation of 1944, which was the inaugural National Executive Committee of the ANC. Its first Secretary General, ironically, is from the Eastern Cape called President Tambo, former president of the ANC. He started by being a secretary general of the ANC Youth League in its founding. So when you look into the history of the liberation politics of this country, you cannot not think about Oliver Tambo. Now, when you trace Oliver Tambo's growth and his development, he was first the secretary general of the ANC Youth League. And he then joined the mother body early and then became deputy president, secretary general of the ANC, deputy president, then later president. So it's a very interesting story from those of us who joined politics for their liberation cause, who thought that they want to do exactly what the likes of President Tambo would have done. History has placed us into this position now. I'm Secretary General. It's nothing that I was working to be, you know, but history has placed us into that. And we think that we've got a huge responsibility on our shoulders, you know, rather than, you know, thinking that it's a celebratory, you know, position. It places a huge responsibility, and we dare not to fail it, because if we fail, would have failed those many generations who have laid their lives, who have put everything aside to focus in the liberation of this country, to ensure that you know, Africa rise again. You know, they did not only theorize and over-theorize only the South African, you know, or domestic politics here in the country. They also participated in what we call African integration, you know. That's why in their agenda, it has been about, you know, the liberation of the entire continent, you know, from the yoke of colonialism, from a transatlantic slave trade that preceded colonialism, you know, from apartheid in the context of South Africa, you know. So all these laws that were draconian laws that were erected in South Africa in order to suppress the black man, you know, they participated at a time when it was not, you know, fashionable, you know, to be in politics. It was really, you know, taking what I would call a cause, you know. So we think that we are at a time where politics of our country require real leaders, you know, not celebrities, not people who join because it's nice, because it's, you know, it's people who were in it for the cause, you know. And the cause is about the liberation of black people, what I would call Africans in general, blacks in general and Africans in particular. And that cause, we have not won, you know, as the African people, the real cause, which is the total liberation of our people. It has not been won. Now, the Youth League has a responsibility to ensure that we never dishonor the cause of liberation.
I wonder then, because when you're looking at your forebears, when you're looking at the ones that your predecessors and the ones that came before you, there were different generations and different times in terms of the liberation, in terms of their own revolution. What is, when you're looking at, for instance, Julius Malema, just, you know, recent history, that cohort, the Malemas, the Lamolas, the David Masondos and Floyd Chivambus, as much as you would like to erase them, but he still is part of your history. That cohort was looking for economic freedom. Is this something that is paramount and central to that liberation that you speak of?
Lizeka, you must understand, you know, sometimes they say history repeats itself. The first time it's a shock, the second time it's a farce, you know. Look, when you look into the entire history of the Youth League, Robert Sobukwe was in the first NEC of the Youth League. There has been a very rigorous debate since the formation of the Youth League. That is why the only organization within the body politics of the ANC now that has got ideology is the Youth League. Its ideology is African nationalism. So it's progressive African nationalism. Now, look at the formation of the Youth League in 1944. The Youth League is formed in 1944. In 1949, the founding document of the Youth League becomes directly influencing the mother body, which led in the early 50s, to the defiance campaigns and so on. Now, in the mid-50s, which is 1955 to be exact. At the time the ANC adopts the Freedom Charter, here is a catch point. The former Secretary General of the ANC Youth League is now the Secretary General of the ANC, President Tambo. Now, President Tambo becomes Secretary General of the ANC, the ANC adopts the Freedom Charter. Now, that's what we call modern leaders of the ANC. Now, in 1959, The group that called itself Pan-Africanist group that said South Africa does not belong to all who live in it, black and white, because that was the dispute amongst them. They said, no, we can't say, you know, white people are South Africans. And the question that the then leaders were asking, which we are still asking, how do you say a person who has born here, has been here for centuries, right? He's the fourth or third generation that is not from that particular nation state. I mean, the definition of nation states is people that have not originally, you know, always settled in that particular area. They move, and because of time and because of where they are born, you know, then they become, you know, citizens of that particular nation state. And this is what the modern leaders of the ANC were asking the likes of the PAC grouping that broke away.
Yeah, that resulted in a splint, right?
Then that resulted in a splint. Mm. And I'm coming to the point about Julius and Floyd. I'm saying Sobukwe, you can't erase him in the history of the Youth League. He was in the founding National Executive Committee. Julius and Floyd, which is the generation. By the way, that is our generation. Those of us who are in the exit, we were there in the congresses that they were elected in, right? As national, but whenever National Executive Committee, we were branch leaders because of our age and time, you know. Now the point is, at the time where the comrades were to depart the ANC, you must look at the events that were at play. Now, what were the events that led to their expulsion? On the contrary, it's not the economic freedom, program. Because that program, in the 26th National Congress that elected us, we had reaffirmed the 24th National Congress resolution, but advanced them and said, okay, here is what we took as a, because these are Congress resolutions. These are not individual. Leave the fact that they stole the intellectual property of the Youth League and made it theirs. And they left and said they are economic freedom fighters. Now, I don't have an issue about that, because if we say Freedom Charter must be a source document from which everybody understands that these are the hopes and aspirations of all South Africans, we can't want to have a full claim of it, you know? You see, because if we say economic freedom is a generational mission, even if you fight for it, you are in the EFF or you are in another party, the PAC or whatever, you know, it's good because it's a generational mission. We all want to ensure that this country's economy is transformed and that it works for the population and the it reflects the demographics of our people. And that's what all other nation states that have succeeded, they've done. Chinese have done the same, you know. Americans have done the same and so on. I'm saying the issue which we are fighting for is that the structure of the South African economy is so skewed. It favors those who got ill-gotten wealth through colonialism and apartheid. That's the structure, even post-apartheid. So apartheid economic structure is still intact. And that's the point we're making. And we're saying, unless we change the patterns of ownership, control, and management of the economy, would have achieved a generational mission. It's not the Youth League issue. Remember, the membership of the Youth League is not equal to the population of this country, but we're fighting for the entirety of the population of this country, including yourselves, who are not members of the Youth League, that this economy must work for yourselves, your children, who are blacks in general and Africans in particular, because there is history why you are poor. That history was humanly engineered. Transatlantic slave trade was humanly engineered. Colonialism was human. It favored a certain race. And it's not racism. When we said, comrades, colleagues, citizens of this country, you who are white, you have inherited spoils of colonialism and apartheid, deliberately engineered to empower yourselves. So don't oppose programs like affirmative action. You see, broad-based economic empowerment. They are trying to redress the imbalances created, not made because you are the best things that has ever been seen. They were created by legislation. So we're creating legislative, reforms to ensure that the economy of this country, its ownership, control, and management is now favoring all South Africans. And once the fields are equaled in terms of access to finance, access to land, access to equipment, which is what is very expensive, for those that don't have collateral, which are Africans, which are blacks and Africans in particular, and they are inability to have these collaterals. It's because their parents, their great grandparents, were dispossessed of the land. They were dispossessed of their riches, You see, it's nothing that happened, you know, because the white South Africans were better. No, it's because colonialism dispossessed black Africans, and therefore this must be changed under the democratic dispensation, not through the barrel of the gun. And that's why we differ with everything that has to do with violence. Mm. We say, no, we can't do these things violently, you know. But there is, at a particular point in time, what is called revolutionary violence. Because if those who have do not see the need that the majority are getting poor and poorer, and they are becoming social scums. These are Africans who are social scums that you see staying in informal settlement, in areas that have no sanitation, no water, in areas that have no electricity. These are black Africans. So there is history to why they are where they are, you know. So that reality is what the ANC and the ANC youth league has been fighting for. So the generation of 44 said freedom in our lifetime. This generation is fighting for economic freedom in our lifetime. That generation achieved freedom 50 years. We are impatient to wait for 50 years to achieve economic freedom. And we have been saying, don't enter all those that are opposing this proposition of industrialization of the South African economy in order for it to create economic opportunities and jobs. Those who are saying they oppose us when we say we must have 70% of export quotas for raw minerals in order to beneficiate these minerals and create jobs here at home. You see, those who want to privatize public assets, because state assets are public.
Is it not the ANC that wants to privatize?
No, I'm saying those who are advocating. The ANC has never, there's no policy of the ANC that talks to privatization. Mm. You can go to any conference of the ANC. So the point here we're making, the ANC is very clear about ensuring that restructuring of state-owned enterprises, for example, must be done in such a way that this it builds a capable developmental state that plays a role in the economy so that the economy can be able to work for the majority of South Africans. And I can tell you, I'm saying to you, the majority of South Africans, fortunately or unfortunately, are black and Africans in this country.
Let's talk about, I mean, if we're talking about economic transformation and if we're talking about this agenda that the ANC Youth League has adopted since its 26th conference. It's 30 years now that the ANC has been in power, and it continues to be in power, albeit with other parties, in power with other parties. But 30 years of ANC rule, and this, when you're talking about companies, when you're talking about managers who are still predominantly white in private companies, it still exists within an ANC ruled country. Who then failed?
Lizaga, you must understand, the ANC has put in as law under its dispensation that there must be Employment Equity Act. Mm. That Employment Equity is an attempt to ensure that we redress the imbalances of the past. Now, you would know that in every action, there is reaction, Lizaga. The actions that the ANC would have taken at policy level that affects, look at in the public sector, there's been that what we call employment equity has been addressed in the public sector. The private sector has not come on board. But who is largely in the private sector in South Africa? It's white communities, right? Because post-1994, South Africa's private sector is largely dominated, you know, by white South Africans. We've been saying to white South Africans, some are our friends, some we know, some we studied with. We tell them, gentlemen, unless you wake up and smell the coffee, this country will enter into a revolution. And when it enters into a revolution, this negotiation that we have been trying to say, let's have a peaceful rise, all of us as South Africans and as the continent, let's not enter again into violent takeover, you see, of resources and all of that, what you did under colonialism.
Do you think that the July 16 unrest was a warning shot for such?
Look, July unrest was a different circumstance altogether, because it had nothing to do With the circumstances we're talking about economic, you know.
How so? I mean,
look, okay. Because, I mean, what's the arrest about of former President Zuma do with the economy?
No. But I doubt that the hundreds of thousands of people who were looting were in revolt or in protest of President Jacob Zuma. Some may have. I mean, they could have been conspiracies. They could have been people were conspiring for such an act. But I doubt that the people that were out in the streets, it was purely because of hunger. It was purely because of this unemployment that we keep talking about. So that's why I'm asking, do you think that this could have possibly been a warning shot to government and even private sector about the inequality that still exists in this country?
Lizega, I'm saying to you, don't liken what happened in July as something to do with the structure of the economy.
Mm.
What that had done, which is in reality, is that it found real disparities, you know, of our people. Being unemployed, living in squalor conditions, really not having the 3 meals as they are supposed to, GDP per capita in those individual households, you know, very low. It found them with real disparities. And we are saying, therefore, opportunists ignited, you know, that particular reality, you know, for as a revolt. But you must go and check the people that were affected in terms of the local economies. Mm. The shops that were banned, the wholesales that were destroyed are wholesales that were meant to service those local people. You see? So this is the point we're making. No revolutionary must ban, you know, what services him or her.
Mm.
You see? You can't say when you are in desperate poverty, you burn a shop next to you and you are saying you are servicing yourself. There's no revolution in doing that. You see, if the people are driving a revolution, it must affect those who have, not affecting you. So it now affected the convenience and the work opportunities of those that were working in those shops, which were largely black, by the way. So it had nothing to do with the revolution, what happened there. It had everything to do with people that were created a sentiment and a narrative around them that the former president is arrested, therefore revolt.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Then they revolted. And because they are hungry and because they are poor and all of that, they then entered into looting. You can, if you have ever seen, we have led strikes ourselves. In a revolutionary cause, there are always opportunists coming in. You know, what we call lumpenproletariat. You know, it always come, they always come in, but as spoilers in the revolution. You know, so there's nothing revolutionary about that. And I'm saying the revolution that we're talking about is when these majority black South Africans, you know, will enter Lizeka in the farms and occupy them. When they will enter in the factories and occupy them, you know, the workers turning against their bosses and taking over factories. That is the revolution that we are warning. That if we don't grow this sort of this economy in order that it caters, both in terms of economic opportunities and jobs for the majority of this country's population, you are going to enter into a revolution that may not be controllable. And because there is history to that, the ownership patterns of this country are still favoring a few minority, who are white in the main. That reality is connected, Lizeka, with apartheid and colonialism. Mm. Because the assets they have, they did not have all of them now. Some of them that they've grown them because they had something to grow. You see, if you're from an informal settlement, what were you going to grow? You had no collateral, nothing. Even if you have ideas, you have now gotten education because ANC has assisted you with TEFSA or NSFAS, you know. But if you have no collateral in this country, it's difficult for you, for your idea, whether it's a good business idea, for you to get funding by commercial banks. Who owns these commercial banks? Who are creating this financial apartheid, you know, access to finance to make it difficult. It's still those that benefited under colonialism and apartheid. And I'm saying, Lizeg, unless we restructure the South African economy, that's why we are calling for our own government, you know, to press on policies that are going to transform this country's economy. Look at countries like China, Lizeg. China said it wants to build what it calls high standard socialist market economy. High standard socialist market economy. The word socialist is very important in their economy, because the word socialist in their economy, the two words, in fact, socialist and market economy. You see, these are two words. People often think that a market economy can only be capitalist.
Mm.
You see? And market economy can be socialist, because how it distributes wealth and income is very important, right? Because if you are a country that is in the catch up on development, how your economy functions, it must be such that it distributes this wealth and income to the majority of your population. And that's what China managed to do. It created, you know, a world of opportunities for its youth, for its population. And therefore, they are getting absorbed by the economy, others as in jobs, others as entrepreneurs. And that is what we're calling for in South Africa. We're saying there's no need for you to enter into this debate whether you think that efficiency won't happen. We're not talking about state ownership here. We're talking about creating entrepreneurial opportunities for these many young people in South Africa who now have entered into the world of education and are educated and now want to express their skills, you know, through ensuring that they sell their intellectual labor power in the form of their companies and in the form of being employees. And that is what we're calling for. That is transformation of a country's economy that is in the catching up.
Can you drive this program with the government of national unity?
Definitely. That's why we said the government of national unity must not be seen on racial lenses.
Mm.
It must be seen on policy lenses, right? And that is why ours as the Youth League were very clear that we support the government of national unity so long as the government of national unity preoccupies itself about industrialization of the South African economy. So long as the government of national unity ensures that this country's economy is efficient and that this country's economy is not expensive.
Mm.
Because it's one thing, Lizeka, to have an economy that is unaffordable, right? So what do we mean when we say an economy that is unaffordable? Once the electricity tariffs shoot high, once the transport costs shoot high, even if you get 50,000, your 40% of your salary goes to these variables. And we call these variables public goods, right? And we're saying, let's lower the cost of these public goods. And how we lower them is a very important factor, both for entrepreneurs and for those that are working in the economy. So it's a very critical element and a very important balance to be made in any economy when you grow it, when you industrialize. If you don't industrialize, Lizek, which is our main program as this 26th National Executive Committee, is that if you don't industrialize, you will never create jobs. That is why we're saying 70% of our country's minerals must be beneficiated here at home. You see? And within the SADC regions, within the continent, in order to create jobs for this African youth that is now, you know, dying in the seas, trying to cross to Europe and Asian Pacific.
In essence, what you are saying is that we have to change even the way that we trade with, for instance, China.
Definitely. We are saying that. We are saying we cannot continue to sell raw commodities to China and we then call China our largest trading partner. We must be in a trade balance where ourselves, we are now selling certain commodities that are value added in South Africa to China, to Chinese market. It can't be that we are flooding our market with finished products from China, because China would have created jobs for their own Chinese people. We must have national interest and interests that are talking to our youth. And our youth is now, Lizeka, largely educated. You know, the ANC has done wonders in this country. No one talks about it. What the ANC has done, do you know that no country has achieved what we have achieved in 30 years? The young people between the ages of 15 years and 21 are fully literate in South Africa. There are countries here in the continent and in the Asian Pacific that were liberated before us. You see, we have not achieved that of full literacy of a population of young people. You know, a cohort that is now going to grow over time of full literacy. What that means is that these young people can enter in any sector, you know, can study any field of study because they are fully literate. They can write, they can read, they can calculate, you know. Now, this is a very important, you know, development index for any nation state, you know, in order for it to be productive. Because for any nation state to be productive, it must build certain skills for the economy, for its population, in order for that population to be able to be productive and grow its own economy.
I want to ask you about, because you had strong views about the former minister of I'm calling it a minister of unemployment. That's what you said, as the ANC Youth League, the minister of employment, Mr. Tulas Ngesi. Are you more encouraged with this minister? Have you had any engagements with this minister as it relates to you know, the rate of employment, the you know, unemployment being an Achilles heel for government, especially when it comes to the youth?
Lizeka, we engaged with the officials of the ANC. We engaged with different ministers, including her. We are saying we are giving her time, you know, to acclimatize herself with the department. The department is very strategic and very important in order to ensure that it reskills and upskills not only the youth, by the way. It's not meant for the youth. It's not a youth department. It's a department that is also supporting, you know, retrenched workers, you know, to reskill, upskill them in order to ready them for the new jobs in the economy. We are saying she must play that role, but also look into the mass unemployed youth to ensure that they grow, they support in terms of the skills that are needed by the jobs market, you know. And we think that her with the two deputies, she can do very well if they are focused into ensuring that they look into what the higher education has given them as critical skills and ensure that those critical skills are linked to the jobs market, and the rest will be history.
I want to ask you what your understanding is with the recent announcement by the president that state entities will be moved to the aligned ministries. And yet there's this bill which is going to be tabled in parliament to be passed, which is around a holding company for these state entities. Because I think some of us are a little confused as to, is this a temporal measure by the ANC and government itself, moving them to the aligned ministries as it pertains to the resolution of the ANC in its 54th conference? Or is it something that is going to be permanent? And what does it mean when you have this holding company? And what would you like to see with this holding company?
Look, Lizeka, the ANC's resolution is very clear that, which is why we've applauded the president for moving the state-owned enterprises into line departments. Our view is that line departments can better monitor their entities because it's entities of specific sectors of the economy. Our departments, as they are structured, you would see that they are dealing with certain sectors of the economy, and they're very clear. So Minister of Electricity has ESCOM. You know, this is very good, because then he is able to be accountable to his department and the entities functioning in that particular sector of the effectiveness of the entity that the policy department is entrusted to ensure that it champions. Minister of Transport, entities like Transnet and PRASA under her. So very important, because then the policy, you know, crafting will be linked to implementation. South Africa has never had a policy problem, but an implementation problem, you see? So we are saying this implementation problem is a disjuncture between policy and implementation, right? Because policy and implementation should be integrated, right? There should be a good link between policy monitoring and implementation monitoring so that there's no disjuncture between what others are to implement. If they are seated somewhere and, you are not going to be able to ensure that there is efficiency in that particular regard. So we that's an ANC resolution. We support it 112%. And that's why, as the Youth League, we had written a statement to say we support the president for... ensuring that the ANC resolution in this particular regard is followed. And therefore now what we need is effective monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of these particular policies that have been erected.
I don't doubt that you support them moving to line ministries. But what I am trying to understand, and I've asked the Secretary General of the ANC as well, and I haven't been... happy or satisfied with the response, and perhaps maybe you could help me there, is what exactly is this holding company for?
Look, the holding company, as we understand it, is that it will be in DPME and is for monitoring the state-owned enterprises, because DPME is about monitoring. Mm. So you've got to have some instrument that you use to monitor, state-owned enterprises as opposed to departmental monitoring. Remember, DPME is about monitoring, evaluation, and planning for the entirety of government, right? Now, when you are creating an instrument just to monitor entities alone, I don't think there is anything untoward to that, so long as it does monitoring effectively of the state-owned enterprises.
So operationally, it will be still led by the shareholder, which is Hoshienzo, for instance, and Ms. Baba Chrissy. Are you not then concerned? I remember Mr. Andre de Reiter was speaking about Eskom being used as a feeding trout by ANC cadres. Are you not concerned of regressing back to that culture?
No, look, Lizega, the ANC has taken very serious, bold steps, right, against corruption, malfeasness, and any malpractices that have nothing to do, with ensuring that our entities are functioning and ensuring that they play their developmental role. Mm. Remember, it is us that have theorized what a developmental state must mean, right? And how are state-owned enterprises going to play their developmental role in that particular developmental state? So it can't be that now we will regress into a culture malpractices, malfeasness, and corruption when we've created all these systems. Remember, we've created a systems, corruption systems that can be able to detect, when there is malpractice in any of our entities. Now we have zero tolerance to corruption at all levels.
I want to take you to the ANC Youth League. I think let's go back to the ANC. Before I go back there, in fact, your reaction to Butimana Mela. He was meant to be in Parliament last week, and I'm sure you've seen this. And he called Mr. Songezo Zibi, who was the SCOPA chair, last minute call, hours before they were meant to convene to discuss the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. And he said he couldn't make it because of an event. Given the problems, the challenges faced by the scheme, which you have been very passionately talking about as the ANC Youth League, what was your reaction to Mr. Manamela?
Look, Lizeka, we don't know what were the intrinsic nitty-gritties in the issue between Mr. Zibi and Comrade Manamela.
Parliament, not Mr. Zibi. It was SCOPA. It was Parliament.
Yes. I'm saying the chair and the deputy minister, because it's them that communicate about the meeting and scheduling and all of that. So we don't know what happened, and we don't want to enter into the business of parliament. What we want is that there must be full accountability of the happenings of NSFAS. It's a very important instrument to ensure that children of the working class coming from poor backgrounds, not previously, I'm saying poor backgrounds, are supported by the government GNU, led by the ANC, to ensure that these children are productive workforce for this country's economy. You know, because if you kill a scheme like NSFAS, it means you have destroyed the future of millions of young South Africans who are ranging now in the higher education sector around 2 million. You know, who are supported, you know, through that particular scheme. And we know that how important that scheme is for a child of a poor family, of a working class family, you know, to support the dreams of that particular child. But also to, as a country, to create a productive, a population, you know, because when you invest in education as a country, you are investing in productiveness of your citizens. Mm. So in order for your citizens to be active citizenry, they have to have certain skills, you know, in order for them to participate in the economy.
I want to finish off talking about government and to go back to the ANC and the ANC Youth League. I want to go back to what you were saying about this warning you were giving to both the private sector and government around the next revolution. Is this something that, I mean, you've had numerous conversations with the president. You have him on speed dial, I'm sure. How often have you spoken about this with the president? How often have you spoken about this with the private sector? And when I'm talking about the private sector, I'm talking about captains of industry. And what is their reaction to the warnings that you give them as the ANC Youth League?
If you have seen the president agrees with us 112%. Mm. That's why if you have listened to the president of the ANC in the campaign trail, he has been quoting the Youth League all over, saying the Youth League has said we must industrialize the economy, we must create export quotas, let's no longer export, you know, the rocks and dust, you know, into other countries for them to create jobs for their own population. Let's now industrialize. I mean, the president has agreed with us. And now we've been saying to president, now we're going to monitor, president, the implementation of this. And the precursor to that is to ensure that we lower the cost of the productive forces and ensure that the cost of producing in South Africa any commodity is low, is cost effective, you know, so that we can be able to be competitive in the global markets. So that's the point that we are discussing. It's the nitty-gritties now of this industrialization, how it must be done, how it's going to be successful. So with the president, I think we're in the good path with the president. Now, the issue is the private sector. Remember, South Africa's capital is, very fluid, very liquid. Let me put it that way. Very liquid. We've been saying you are not investing in the industry, physical infrastructure, in the factories. Here in this country, you are making profits out of raw materials that you are selling, you know, into other, you know, countries, and therefore having all this liquid capital that you are not reinvesting in the economy. And we are saying to you, what you are doing is almost treason to allow your country, you know, to be like a country at war, where you have 64% of youth unemployment, you know? So it's a very disturbing, you know, analysis. When you get to crunch the numbers, you know? So we are saying to the private sector, any progressive and patriotic capital invest in their own nation states in order to ensure that they create the much needed jobs by the economy. Some of the captains of industry are agreeing with us. They say, let's sort the issue of electricity, the freight rail, let's sort the issue of efficiency in the port, export and import terminals. And then they can invest, you know, into the country's economy. And that issue is being sorted, you know, by the ANC-led government. In the sixth administration already, there were decisions that were made. Some of them are being refined, and we're saying others, can we refine them here and there in order that our economy is is competitive, because it's about ensuring that which you produced in South Africa, you produce it cheaply, such that when you sell it into other markets, it's not expensive compared to the same product that is produced by another country for the same consumptive markets.
Let's look at the African Free Trade Agreement. You know, we've been talking about this free trade agreement for some time. I think it's 4 or 5 years, if I can remember. And why do you think it's moving at such a snail's pace? There's been some teething problems, obviously. It has to do with, as well as the borders, the fact that we don't have, in terms of currency as well. What do you think are some of the issues, the challenges that we face there to implement this free trade agreement?
Remember, there are infrastructure, financial and non-financial barriers to the full implementation of AFCFTA. Now, all of these matters are not going to be, resolved, in 1 day or in a year's time, right? Because there are various currencies that are dominant within the continent. That matter has to be sorted by AU. And NEPAD must also play its role in terms of its new, development, partnerships of development and so on. But the whole important point here is that these development communities, your SADC region, Central Africa, Eastern and all of that, they've got to play a role that is catalyzing the implementation of AFCFTA. The first thing is that you need to build an integrated, it may not be one, integrated customs, union in the continent, And we've got to agree about, for example, the issue in the mineral, in the Africa Minerals Commission. This matter that all of us as a continent, let's ensure that we create export quotas for raw minerals. What you do, because all these minerals that are here in the continent are the ones that are being used, in other economies. But if you create export quotas, say, no, we're going to stockpile our minerals. We're still going to mine them, but are stockpiling them. But we are open to capital investment that is going to create beneficiation in our countries, right? And then we agree that in this country, we're going to have copper that is beneficiated there. It's going to be lithium there. It's going to be, we agree about all of that and we map it out in terms of our industrial development plan as the continent. And then we say, okay, Europeans, Westerns, Asians, the Asian Pacific, the Chinese and so on, you can come to Africa so long as you are going to invest capital to create factories that our youth, our people get employment, that we create value here and, technological upgrading of our industry, industrial upgrading, all of that. That is what Africa needs. You see, so in order for Africa to be able to do that, it must have this agreement. Then we can build rail infrastructure, port, airports for export purposes of finished products.
I want to just, because I know I've been talking about finalizing on economy and government, but I just wanted to get your take briefly on this. There's been debates around China moving in on Africa, right? There's some people are saying that China is the new imperialist in Africa. And given your relationship with the Communist Party of China as the ANC and the ANC Youth League and so forth, what is your view about this? Because some people have said that we are exchanging, as Africa, we are exchanging one imperialist for another. Your perspective on this?
Lizeka, look, any nation state in the international system enters into this multilateral organization, your UN, your IMF, your World Bank, your World Economic Forum, your BRICS, your North Atlantic and all of Eurozone, ALBA in the Latin America, AU in Africa and all of that, all these nation states enter into those multilateral and bilateral institutions with their national interests, right? China, like all other nation states, has got its national interests. China has got to feed the 1.45 billion Chinese. China has to ensure that the 1.45 billion Chinese have got work and they are productive. That's what China is doing. Now, you can't say China wants to be a new imperialist force when China is advancing its national interest. And that's why we are saying, in ensuring that Africa rises again, let's have a continental, industrial plan. So that industrial plan talks about how these economies are going to cross-pollinate each other in terms of ensuring that they grow. We don't want every commodity to be beneficiated in South Africa. That would be very absurd. We are a revolutionary movement, a liberation movement, the oldest in the continent. Ours is to think broadly about the entirety of our continent. How do we have an industrial policy continentally, industrial plan continentally, that is going to ensure that those in Guinea-Bissau, those in Burkina Faso, the population of Burkina Faso is also having industries that it commodities that it produces can be sold in South Africa. We can sell others that were producing them. We have that kind of a trade agreements, in the continent. Firstly, in the 1.1 billion population that we have, but we ensure that our people, we prioritize that our people are working. We can't have our people living on social security net in the continent as they are. We see Africans being, the face of poverty, when their continent is so rich with mineral resources. And that's what we are, taking a dim view about as the youth of this generation. We're saying, no, it can't happen. The intellectual capacity of these young people in this continent, we have been interacting with them, is far amazing. So there is nothing difficult. It's about injection of capital, ensuring that there is technology, there is equipment, and therefore that there is beneficiation of these minerals in the continent.
Now let's get back. I know I've got 11 minutes with you. Let's get back to the ANC Youth League. One wonders when you're looking at your 80th anniversary and its graphic of memorabilia, you're looking at the presidents that you've posted there and the pictures, there's only one person who is absent from that memorabilia. Can you just explain to us why exclude Mr. Julius Malema?
Look, our reason for exclusion of Julius Malema, you would have seen that it's not a matter that is mischievous. Everybody knows that Julius is no longer a member of the ANC and ANC Youth League and doesn't want to, of the ANC, let me put it that way, because by age now he has passed the Youth League issue. Now, why must we, put into our history? We will tell that particular story that Julius Malema was the Youth League president that defected. It ends there.
You will tell that story.
Yeah, don't have to be posting him in our historical archives. Why must we?
Is that not a revising history?
Isn't it's
that
not.
No. What the white people used to do with our own history?
No. His history is written. Mm. We've written that Julius Malema was there as the Youth League president, but he then exited.
Do you not credit him with anything when it comes to the progress of the ANC Youth League, at least in his time as the president?
We don't credit him with?
With anything when it comes to the progress of the ANC Youth League. I could think of a number of reasons why you would want to credit Mr. Julius Malema.
No, we talk with Julius. We have no problem with him. But we tell him that we will not be advertising his face in our history posters. But what we have done is not to rewrite history. It's to say Julius Malema was the 23rd and 24th president of the Youth League that got expelled.
I want to ask you about when you, because it was interesting to me that your president, Colin Malaji, is going to have an event where he's going to be hosting some of your former presidents. I would think the likes of Malusi Gigaba, Lulu Jackson, and can remember now, Fikile Mbalula, for instance, would be some of the names that he would be speaking to. When you look at them, what do you think were some of the mistakes that they have made that you don't want to repeat as this generation?
Look, each generation would have its own achievements, its own mistakes. There's nothing you would say, I don't want from to do, you know, from this and that. No. That will be very mischievous politically, you know. What I know is that they've made Darling Mark for the times they were leading the Youth League. They would not have inherited it unless the role they played would have been so, you know, meaningful and impactful that they have done. We'll be having various leaders in that meeting. We call it a celebratory meeting of the 80th anniversary of the Youth League. There will be presidents, there will be secretary generals, deputy presidents, you know, TGs of different generations, and so on. All that event is all about is about reflection, you know, of these many years of the Youth League's activism, its role at different epochs, you know, of our liberation struggle, and what is to be done, you know, by this, you know, these many generations. Remember, the Youth League in its nature is the preparatory school of the ANC, a lifeblood of the ANC. So these generations of the Youth League, people who grew up in the Youth League from 14 up to, you know, now they are 50, that generation, they are 50 plus years, those that were leading Boma Lucy and others, you know. So there's a lot you can learn from them and Mbalula and all of that at their times in the Youth League and what could be done to ensure that we re-invocate the youth of this country, ensuring that we go back to basics, ensure that the youth is well vested of its history, because that which the 1944 youth generation was fighting for has not been completed.
I want to ask you about if you could reflect on the elections, particularly in KZN, even nationally. Some have said that in KZN, for instance, some of the reasons why you lost and you were humiliated in the polls was due to the arrogance of the ANC in that province. And if you want to broaden it, the arrogance of the ANC as a whole. Do you, when you're making your own reflection as the ANC Youth League and you're looking at your elders, do you not see this?
Lizek, it will be unfortunate if I can enter into that, you know, bandwagon of saying the comrades were arrogant and all of that. Because we were in KZN, I think we stayed there for a week or so as the entire movement trying to campaign. Because the movement knew that the KZN phenomenon is not what the media is saying, arrogance of the leaders that are there now. And all of that, you know, that is not entirely true. You know, I'm not saying there are no glimpses of that. You know, sometimes people are saying I'm arrogant myself. You know, when I'm assertive about a particular matter, they say I'm arrogant. They say the president of the Youth League is arrogant. But the president becomes assertive on a particular matter. They say you're arrogant, you know. And I'm saying the circumstances in KwaZulu-Natal are different from what the media is reporting. And I'm saying this because you must understand, Lisa, the former President Zuma was first a DSG of the ANC. You see, post the unbanning of the ANC in 1990, of the liberation, he was elected in 1991 Deputy Secretary General, and after that elected National Chair and the Chairperson of KwaZulu-Natal at the same time, held two positions. and a MEC of finance in that province. The ANC had deliberately said to President Zuma, go and build the ANC branches in KwaZulu. Remember, it was post unbanning. Now, branches must be built now, physically, you know, not in the underground form. So he was involved all of those years as an official of the ANC, not just as a PEC member or a person in the branch there, you know. He was an official, a national official, all those years. He became deputy president of the ANC and became two times president of the ANC. So what the people of KZN saw in him was ANC for all these 30 years, Lizeka. You see, because the ANC was almost personified in him around KZN. That's the same elements you would have seen in many years. Other people remember ANC to be a Mandela, you know, organization. Now, when he created confusion to people and saying, I'm still ANC, but I'm MK, you see, that confusion really impacted on our electoral fortunes in KwaZulu-Natal, because he deliberately held that narrative, because he knew that the ANC would have given me this responsibility to be around these communities for many years, and therefore I can, you know, confuse them. So that is why we had characterized that act of him. You know, someone who has been an official for all these years, that act is an act of counter-revolution. And that's why we're very clear that the circumstances in KZN are not normal, you know.
Let's go to the abnormality of the circumstances in KZN, which you were fully aware of when you went into these elections, with or without Jacob Zuma as a distraction. When you look at the NASREC 2.0, do you perhaps think that you made a mistake as the ANC by not considering that you should have a representation in KZN, given how big KZN is and given the influence of KZN to you as the ANC?
What do you mean there is no representative of KZN?
There's no representative in the top seven.
No, the ANC is not like that, Lizaga. It would be very unprincipled for any, you know, one to think in that particular way.
But yet the KZN community...
You must listen and let me finish.
Okay.
You see, it will be very unprogressive and reactionary for any individual to think that way. Remember, top seven, there could be a particular number of people that are there, you know. For example, you see, Northwest is not in the top five, you know, but Northwest has performed spectacularly well, you know, given the circumstances in terms of electoral support for the ANC, you know. And I'm saying Mpumalanga is not there. Mpumalanga, we got more than 50% in Mpumalanga, while it is not there. Actually, it's the MK that encroached there in Mpumalanga, you know. So this narrative that it's KZN, there is no one from KZN, and therefore the people of KZN did not vote because of that, I think it's far-fetched from where I'm seated. And I'm saying the factor is what I was giving you of the narrative around the persona, you know, former President Zuma, and his, you know, many years having been a face of the ANC in that particular province, you know, constituency of the ANC, and the confusion he created, you know. That confusion was deliberate, you know, and you must give it to him for creating that confusion, because people of the ANC were left confused, because he was saying, I am ANC, I will die ANC, I will never leave the ANC. But all that he was doing was electioneering. It was misleading, misinforming people, you know, that he's a member of the ANC, but yet he knows that he's, you know, working to overthrow the ANC, you know.
So then what needs to be done in terms of the KZN phenomenon? What is the solution for the ANC? What would you advise the ANC as the ANC Youth League? Some people have been talking about disbanding completely because of how much you have been infiltrated. You don't even, I mean, the Fikile Mbalula talks of even sleepers, which still exists in your branches.
I don't want to comment about disbandment, sleepers, and all of that. What I want to say, Lizeka, is that the ANC, you know, is a very old liberation movement, you know. This case at any phenomenon, by the way, it's not new. Mm. You must know that in the early 30s, the President Dube formed ANC of Natal, you see. But the ANC recovered over time from that, you know. The ANC is going to recover. Now the ANC is discussing how to recover the lost ground in KwaZulu-Natal. And you must see what I would call the magical and spectacular, you know, organizing skills of the ANC. We are the only organization that has wall-to-wall machinery all over the country. There is no other organization that lives in the most remote areas like the ANC. It's just the confusion was too high at the time, and the space was too short, you know, in order to correct that party narrative. But if you can go to KZN today, you will hear people of the ANC say, well, we're misled. We thought that, you know, it's reality. And we can't therefore say, no, those people must be expelled or whatever. No. You've got to look into the gravity of issues historically, and how they happened now, and all of that, and rebuild from there. And that's what the ANC is going to do.
And your relationship here with the ANC in Gauteng, given what your president has said in the past about the Gauteng leadership, has that changed? Has there been any communication with the leadership here in Gauteng as it relates to the representation of the youth in his cabinet, in Mr. Banyaza Lesufi's cabinet, that is?
Remember, we're very much assertive about the issue of youth representation as the Youth League, because we constitute a bigger, you know, constituency and, you know, bigger portion of those that work for elections. And it's not because we demand this, even in circumstances that there could have been an opportunity for young people in all these provinces. But we are saying it must not be as though young people are being, you know, are being assisted. It's a, you know, that kind. It's a favor, you know. That's what we're raising. Everybody who constitute government in each and every province must understand that the youth is the future of this country, and it therefore has to be given a responsibility in order to prepare it for the future. Now, in Gauteng, Comrade Panyaza is doing very well. I mean, amongst all premiers we know and we can talk of, he has been doing magically very well for the ANC in Gauteng. The circumstances even here, some of which are subjective, others are objective, are matters the ANC is dealing with. And that's why I said I don't want to comment with that. The ANC has came to Gauteng in NWC. It's making its assessment. What are the issues and all of that? The ANC will make a determination, and that will be communicated not by the Youth League, but the ANC itself.
Then perhaps you can share with me what Mr. Mayile Lebohang Mayile meant in that infamous tweet, which we all thought it was directed towards the ANC Youth League when he spoke about, you know, the tweet.
I don't know. What's the tweet?
The tweet was speaking about certain individuals who are perhaps in relationships with some of the leaders in the ANC, and then they feel that they can now use the ANC Youth League to advance their agendas when it came to the issue around Gauteng.
No, I don't know about that. Look, Liz, we can't be commenting about people who are tweeting in their in their social media walls. They are doing their own things. People can wake up there and say, Liz,
was there no discussion? Because even Mr. Fikile Mbalula entered the fray and called for both Mr. Mayile and Mr. Colin Malaji.
Related to the tweet. It was related to the spats that were there, that were calmed down. The issue about the tweets, I don't remember it being related to the organization and the Youth League.
Mm. Very few questions, three last questions. Briefly, I want to ask you about your reaction to Mr. Thabo Mbeki, him arguing that, you know, step aside should be broadened for those who are implicated to also step aside.
No, look, I don't want to be entering into discussion.
Why not? You are the youth,
president.
You're the radicalist.
No. My radicalism is measured because I belong into an organization. Mm. You know, I don't believe that in the ANC, anybody who raises a policy question must be censored, right? I believe there must be concrete engagements with what he is raising, that it must be broadened. The implications of that and all of that, I can't just stand up and say, no, what he's saying is wrong.
But what is your view?
Look, my view is that you'll be pushing it too far, you see, because what if I accuse you, Lizeka, that, you, for example, that you would have stolen money that you didn't steal on the basis of you being alleged.
But when you look at, for instance, what is happening at play now with the Minister of Justice, is that not tarnishing the ANC's name?
Look, the circumstances of that will be determined in the Integrity Commission. That's why the ANC developed instruments to these issues, because you can't run an organization on the basis of a court of public opinion, right? Then, or allegations, right? Because anybody can be alleged. What if tomorrow they allege that the president must be done that? Therefore, they say, let's remove the president. They allege the deputy president. They say, let's remove the deputy. They allege the secretary. Then we will kill our organization, right? Because we must have empirical evidence, you know, or justifiable evidence about the allegation levels against you. And that's what the ANC would have done in the step-aside rule. Said, unless you are charged, right? If you are charged, then that's something else. But allegations that you are alleged, people are very mischievous, including opposition. They will allege the ANC all the time just to weaken it and all of that. And I'm saying, maybe with the wisdom of former president, Thabo Mbeki, we'll engage him about that. We can't just dismiss it and all of that. Want to hear what was his side of thought, you know, the angle within which he looked at it. And we express the angles within which we think this will have the dire effect for the organization. We can't accept that people's rights must be violated. We are not just a political organization. We're also a human rights organization.
What I take from you, if I'm reading between the lines as the listener, is that you in fact are saying that, you know, an individual like Ms. Thembisi Melane, who's got damning allegations against her with an institution such as the VBS, which has had scandal after scandal, should not step down as the Minister of Justice.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
What are you saying?
I'm saying the Integrity Commission of the ANC, which is a designated independent body meant to listen to such issues, must make a determination.
But you have never, as the ANC, your mother body, has been very scant in following those recommendations. Time immemorial, the body of elders that you talk about has complained that the ANC does not follow its recommendations.
In what instance? The ANC has executed all the issues relating to Integrity Commission. There is not a single matter that the ANC... I sit in the National Executive Committee of the ANC as an ex officio. All matters relating to Integrity Commission that have been ventilated in the Integrity Commission are dealt with in the ANC. There is not a single matter. Mention one, Lizeka. Don't throw wide statements.
I will talk about, for instance, Zizi Godwa, just during the time of Mr. George Mashamba, the Integrity Committee had its own recommendations against Mr. Zizigoda. In fact, it found that he was lying. It only took the NPA's charging of him for you to follow the recommendations. In fact, Mr. Zizigoda stepped aside himself. It wasn't at the behest of the ANC. I will talk about Mr. Zweli Mkhize, who's still in the ANC NEC as we speak, who in fact is now the chair of a committee, and the integrity committee had made adverse findings against him.
Okay, let me start there on Zizigoda. Comrade Zizi, for what I know, his matters were ventilated within the NEC, the NEC that I'm talking about. Those matters were finalized, and the matters really, that's why in the ANC you are given two options. Either you voluntarily step aside, or section, 20.70 is, sanctioned on you. So when a comrade has done that, why do we want the ANC to act when he says, okay, the matters have been ventilated, now I'm stepping aside, until I've cleared my name, on the issue of Comrade Zweli, you are not following, you follow one, that's a problem with media, you follow only allegations. When the comrade is now cleared, on Digital Vibes, he was cleared by all the law enforcement agencies around the issue of that is why he went back into the NEC, that is why he went back into deployment. You see, because he also voluntarily stepped aside as a minister and moved out. So I'm saying media must also report that ANC comrades do step aside voluntarily, and so that they recuse the brand name ANC from their personal issues in order to deal with the matters when they are charged, not when there are allegations, Lizek.
I want...
And that's the policy currently.
We could debate this for a number of hours, but I want to, my last question to you is around your own legacy as this cohort of the ANC Youth League. When you're looking at what you want to leave behind for the next cohort of the Youth League, what do you think is going to be your legacy? And second to that question is this. Yeah, forever we've known that the ANC Youth League has the kingmaker status. It can propel someone to the position of being a president. It happened during Peter Mugabe's time. It happened during Julius Malema's time, Fikile Mbalula's time. The list is endless. And I remember when you, Colin Malaji, Zwelo, were elected, some of us thought that it was it was to propel some particular individuals in the ANC to advance to become presidents and secretary generals and treasurer generals of the mother body. Your reaction to that?
Look, Lizeka, that is fallacy. That we were elected because we're to propel individuals. Let me put this point across. The Youth League remains a critical body of opinion within the body politics of the ANC and the broader liberation, movement. And that will remain, that critical, body of opinion. That is why our legacy want to be remembered as that Youth League that fought for industrialization of the South African economy to create jobs and to create value, in our economy. We want to be remembered for that Youth League that fought for export quotas of raw minerals, that what we want to export is finished products. We want to be remembered as that Youth League that fought against privatization of critical state-owned enterprises like Denel, like Transnet, SAA, which we consider very critical for any nation state, privatization of network industries. We are opposed to that, as this Youth League. Want to be remembered for those. Want to be remembered to have continued the fight for economic freedom, the base for economic freedom, at least. Because if you don't privatize these particular, network industries and so on, we think that you must lower the cost of those particular network industries to allow that our economy become competitive, and that commodities produced in this particular, in the South African economy, can be, competitive in other markets in the continent and globally. That's the legacy we want to leave, want to be remembered of, want to be remembered of this Youth League that would have built strong branches of the Youth League, you know, that would have played a critical, you know, role in the life of the ANC and society in general. So want to be remembered as the Youth League that would have fought for, you know, a revival of effectiveness and efficiency of NSFAS, for example. So that's the legacy we want to leave. And this thing that we were elected to propel the certain individual want to be kingmakers, we're not part of that. We're part of leaving a legacy of ideas, of ensuring that this is what we would have stood for. And if you can see the economic thinking of the ANC now, it's towards industrial policy, industrial plan, you know, what can we do to ensure that we beneficiate? And that's what we want to leave. And that's what our generation of the 26th National Executive Committee commits itself to want to fight for.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Lizeka, for having us.
Well, that's all the time we have on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. Thank you to the ANC Youth League Secretary General, Duoklo Longwudle. We appreciate your time. I'm Lizeka Tandwa. Until next time, thank you for listening.